The Russian defense minister warns that the situation in Ukraine is rapidly deteriorating and trending toward uncontrolled escalation. Thousands of people take to the streets in the Spanish capital to voice their anger at growing living costs amid rising gas prices and inflation. And the race to succeed British Prime Minister Liz Truss heats up as senior conservatives warn against the return of Boris Johnson to power. Thanks for joining us. In a flurry of phone calls with his counterparts in NATO, Russia's defense minister has warned that the war in Ukraine is rapidly spiraling out of control. Sergei Shoigu also told the French, British, and Turkish defense ministers that Ukraine could stage a provocation with the use of a dirty bomb. The so-called dirty bomb uses conventional explosives laced with radioactive material. The UK defense secretary refuted Moscow's claims that Western countries are facilitating a planned escalation of the war. Ben Wallace cautioned that such allegations should not be used as a pretext for greater escalation. The Russian defense minister was also on the phone with the U.S. defense secretary, the second such call in 3 days. In the latest major development on the ground in Ukraine, the Russian military destroyed a depot in the central regions that was storing over 100,000 tons of aviation fuel. From Donetsk, our correspondent Johnny Miller gives us the latest about the front line, as well as the propaganda and psychological warfare going on in Ukraine.
Yes, one Ukrainian official said the attacks yesterday by Russia were as bad as the strikes on the 10th and 11th of October. That's when, of course, Russia started hitting these energy infrastructure. It's interesting that we're not really seeing any pictures of the damage of these strikes. The reason for that is that the Ukrainian government has demanded that its citizens don't post videos of Russian strikes. Of course, many of the videos we see are just of ordinary people getting out their phones and filming the damage. But we're not seeing that now, as there's an attempt by the Ukrainian government to stop any panic that arises from these strikes. There's also a bit of a propaganda war, as they say that their air defense is working. It's not clear how well it is working. Russia says that it's hitting its targets every day. And as you were saying, there's around 40% of Ukraine's energy infrastructure has already been destroyed. In terms of the battle at the front lines, the major focus right now is on Kherson. Ukraine has been building up forces north of Kherson. Russia is evacuating tens of thousands of civilians. They're doing this for three reasons. One, to stop pro-Russian civilians falling into Ukrainian hands. Secondly, to save civilian lives from Ukrainian strikes against the city of Kherson. And thirdly, to help Russia itself have a better operational maneuverability on the battlefield, to enable them to use heavy weapons themselves and set up defensive positions without killing civilians as well. And finally, where I am on the Donbass front, far to the north east of Kherson, the front line is only about 5 kilometers from where I am now. Russia is trying to take advantage of Ukraine mobilizing in Kherson to make advances themselves in Donbass, and they are making some slow, tentative advances near where I am now. Taking the rest of the Donbass and holding on to Kherson, very much the primary objectives of Russia right now.
Thousands of people have held a rally in the Spanish capital, Madrid, in protest at rising inflation. Demonstrators held signs and chanted slogans. They want their pensions to rise in line with the country's consumer prices. The protesters are also demanding better salaries. The protest comes as the cost of living in Spain increased by nearly 9% in October. The Spanish government has introduced two extraordinary packages over the past few months that have subsidized petrol and public transport, among other things. However, protesters say that it's not enough. Food, fuel, rent, and home heating prices have been spiraling upwards in Europe as the continent braces for the worst to come in the winter. Former British Chancellor Rishi Sunak is now in the race for Conservative Party leadership and premiership, as senior members are pushing to prevent a comeback by the former Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Sunak coupled his announcement with a pledge to fix the economy. His supporters are warning that Johnson's return will worsen the UK's economic turmoil. They're planning to secure an overwhelming support that would force Johnson to abandon the race. The former premier has until Monday to announce his candidacy, but he's still short 45 MPs. Britain is reeling from rising inflation and economic crisis. This has been worsened by an ill-advised tax plan by the outgoing Prime Minister Truss. She was forced to announce her resignation on Friday, just after 6 weeks in office. Earlier, we asked economist and author Steve Keen if either Sunak or Johnson is capable of sorting out the UK's economic troubles.
No, and not on the Labour side either. One of the great difficulties of watching this debacle is the knowledge that the position that all of them have on government spending, that they're believing the government borrows from the public and therefore that has to be restrained, otherwise it'll be a burden on the economy and the public, is completely wrong in accounting terms. And so the whole obsession with reducing the budget deficit is actually trying to reduce the amount of money the government creates and leave it all to the private sector, which has done such a fantastic job, of course, since 2008. So it's all driven by a distorted interpretation of what the government should be doing. No one stands out. What is really going on here is the absurdity of the five-year fixed term that the Parliament has in the UK. If this had been a three-year term, none of this farce would be taking place because whoever was the leader would already have been turfed out by the electorate. And I get the feeling there's a very strong desire by the electorate right now to turf out the Tories and let somebody else get in there, whether they know what they're doing or not.
A new survey has found millions of households in Britain are skipping meals as they struggle with the country's deepening cost of living crisis. The findings show that inflation returns to a 40-year high after food prices soar. Syed Purusa has more from London.
It's been just a few weeks since the now resigned Prime Minister, Liz Truss, promised low taxes and high growth. Events have moved incredibly fast in Westminster that a new finance minister is now raising taxes and promising public sector cuts. The U-turns and counter-U-turns have come with a cost for the economy and the people. A new study has found that millions of households are skipping meals or struggling to put healthy foods on the table. Inflation is already at more than 10%. Energy and fuel prices are on the rise, putting a squeeze on Britain's finances.
Well, the start of all this is Brexit. Brexit led to Boris and incompetence. It led to falling living standards. It led to Liz Truss and further incompetence. And Britain basically voted to become poorer by leaving the EU. You can blame some of it on money printing at the Bank of England, inflation taking out, you know, and lowering living standards as well. So it's a combination of things.
A combination of things that have toppled two prime ministers in the span of 1 year.
It's been less than 2 months since Boris Johnson gave way to Liz Truss as Prime Minister, followed by the death of the Queen and a dramatic change in the country's economic outlook. And now, yet another leadership contest that could trigger even more economic and political instability.
And more instability means more people relying on charities, from food banks to keep their stomachs full, and warm rooms where those unable to heat their homes can take refuge in the cold months of winter. The new chancellor has curbed Liz Truss's flagship economic plan of a 2-year cap on energy bills to April next year. And at the end of this month, he's expected to announce a midterm economic policy that could spell out the beginning of another prolonged period of austerity.
Whoever takes over, Boris, Rishi, Mordaunt, who knows? But the outlook continues to be bad because inflation is still out of control. There's not the money or the government finances to give the public sector further wage rises to match that inflation. Strikes will continue. The fiscal position of the country remains dire, partly because we have a smaller economy because of Brexit. So there's no easy solution. There's no easy way out of this. The hole has been dug and it's very deep. and very difficult to climb out of.
Paying the price of that, ordinary Britons, as the Conservative Party races to choose its third leader and prime minister in 1 year, urgent help to those in need couldn't come any sooner. Saeed Purisa, London.
Palestinians have held a funeral for a resistance fighter who was assassinated by the Israeli regime early this morning. Mourners condemned Tel Aviv for his crimes and called for justice. The victim was identified as Tamer al-Kelani, who was killed in a bomb explosion in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. He was a member of Erin al-Usud resistance group, which is now warning of a harsh response. Hamas has also said the crime will not go unanswered. And the Islamic Jihad has reacted by saying that the assassination will only strengthen Palestinians' resolve to fight on. Tensions have intensified in the occupied West Bank. On Saturday, Israeli soldiers shot and wounded a 16-year-old Palestinian in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of Al-Quds, claiming that he had injured an Israeli man in a stabbing attack. Palestinian activist and journalist Wafa al-Udaini joined us earlier from Gaza. She says that Israel's assassination of resistance fighters only strengthens the Palestinians' will to defend their land and nation.
This policy by the occupation is not new. Like, they use to assassinate the leaders of resistance groups. But indeed, this policy will not work at all with Palestinians. The assassination they used since the occupation of Palestine in 1948, they used to assassinate the Palestinian leaders, especially the resistance groups. But, for example, as you can see here in Gaza, they assassinated the resistance, Hamas and the Islamic Jihad groups. But indeed, what we can see here in the West, in the Gaza Strip, is that the resistance grows up, and now it becomes stronger and stronger than before. And for example, for Tamer al-Kelani, he was a former prisoner. Indeed, they detained him for 8 years. And this thing actually doesn't pan him or hinder him from resisting the occupation. Actually, after being released from the occupation, he continued to resist the occupation, to confront the occupation, and to defend his people and to defend his land.
A series of events have taken place recently involving Palestinian resistance groups, in particular Hamas and the Fatah Party. First, their reconciliation, and then Hamas's rapprochement with Syria. This later development was seen as a major breakthrough, so much so that it caught the attention of the U.S., which said that the move would undermine the Palestinian cause and hurt Palestinians as a result. Washington's stance comes as a surprise, given how it has done nothing for Palestinians except backing a regime that violates their rights. The Palestinian movement Hamas has restored relations with the Syrian government after holding a historic meeting with the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. The Syrian president also met with Palestinian factions. This is the first such visit by Hamas officials to the Syrian capital since the year 2012. Hamas said the movement will continue to build and develop solid relations with the Syrian Arab Republic, considering that this decision serves the nation and its just causes, with the cause of Palestine at its core. Yet the important question is, why the resumption of ties at this time? For starters, the resumption of relations between Hamas and Damascus would strengthen the axis of resistance in West Asia. Hamas will now cement its role within the axis of resistance against its enemy, Israel. This may impact the way each acts against the other, especially militarily. This reconciliation appears to have rattled the U.S. cage, which was quick to denounce the move. It said the Assad regime's outreach to this terrorist organization only reinforces its isolation. It also harms the interests of the Palestinian people. But Hamas's move formalizes a rapprochement that has been underway for some time and comes amid fundamental shifts in West Asia. For example, Turkey is considering a rapprochement with Assad. The UAE has already done the same. Also, Jordan's King Abdullah II has showed overtures. The United Arab Emirates and Bahrain have gone ahead and reopened their embassies in Damascus. This is while senior officials in several Arab states are pressing to reinstate Syria's membership of the Arab League. Xi Jinping will be the leader of China for another 5 years after the Communist Congress Party confirms his status. President Xi was picked as the party's general secretary for a third time in a closed-door vote. That means that he will be elected president at the annual meeting of the National People's Congress in March. The new lineup of the party's 7-member standing committee, over which Xi presides, was also announced. Speaking to the media at the event, President Xi said that China will open its doors to the world even wider in the new era. He noted that the country is on the path to modernization and will move towards securing better prosperity for its people. During its week-long gathering, the Congress approved the addition of new wording to the party charter, elevating Xi's core status. Independent China specialist Andrew Loeing says that Xi Jinping is facing both domestic and global challenges during his third term in office.
Domestically, I think President Xi is known to have mentioned a number of traps after the Roman Emperor. A textless trap means if other countries do not believe in the Communist Party, for example, then whatever the Communist Party does would be seen negatively. The second trap is everybody is familiar with is the Thucydides trap, rivalry between the world's two great superpowers. And the third trap is the middle income trap, which entrapped a number of developing countries for a long, long time in middle income without rising to higher levels of development. The fourth trap is what Professor Joseph Dye of Harvard Kennedy School refers to as the Kindleberger trap. That is, even if a country reaches the top of the world superpower, it's questionable whether that country can deliver in terms of global governance. As, for example, the ability of the United States at the moment to be able to maintain global stability is in doubt.
And that is for this edition of World News.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of first grade. My dad, who taught me the art of
listeners, special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, October 23rd, 2022. I'm Atefe Irfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special, as you know, is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special, the Sunday program, is your program. It's your views that are important. Please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, the Sunday program, your program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. You know why? Because these reception reports enable us to have a better service to our listeners around the world. And all of you who sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL from us. And here I truly send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Victor Varzin from Russia, Federico Correa from Italy, and Marek Peace from Poland. So Victor, Federico, and Marek, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to your radio station, IRIB English Radio. And of course, we've received many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these, of course, great emails. From Austria, we've received an email from Joan Hachol. From Japan, we've received an email from Hitoshi Sugio. Owen Williams from England has sent us an email. Artur Fernandez Lorella, one of our old and regular listeners from Spain, has sent us an email. And the last but not the least is an email from one of our old and regular listeners, Tio from Manila, Philippines. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. As I said, from Austria, we've received an email from John Hutchell. I wish I'm right in pronouncing your name, John. Anyway, let's see what he says. Dear IRIB English Radio, this is a reception report from Austria. There is some fading, but in general, all the transmission is well received, given a modern receiver. I would appreciate to receive an electronic QSL card. I appreciate the diversity and, as such, your English news service at times and in respect to certain topics, a valuable contribution to a different view. All the best. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. John Hachel from Austria. We appreciate your email. And my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL as verification, Joan from Austria. So, you enjoy the diversity of the programs, thank God, as well as the new section, it seems you liked it. Thank you for letting us know about that. Anyway, Joan Hutchell from Australia, we wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And from Japan, we've received an email from Hitoshi Sugio.
Hitoshi Sugio says, I listened to your English program at home. Signal was very weak and I had difficulty to understand the programs. I hope this reception report will be helpful for your technicians. If you confirm the details of my report is correct, I request you to send me your verification card or letter to my address in Japan or by email. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Hitoshi Sugiya, and many thanks for this email. You seem to be a new listener, Hitoshi Sugiya from Japan, and it's a pleasure for us. So, you listened to IRIB English radio programs at home, and that's great. And unfortunately, you found the signal weak. But Hitoshi Sugiya from Japan, be sure that our technicians and engineers will fix the problem very soon. For the time being, accept our electronic QSL as verification. Hitoshi Sugiya from Japan, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. We wish you all the best, Hitoshi Sugiya from Japan. And after a short break, I will be back with you. This is Listeners Special, and I am reading your great emails, dear listeners. So, from England here, we've received an email from Owen Williams. Let's see what Owen says. I am listening to your service from Bristol, England. I am listening using a portable receiver and just the attached short whip antenna. Considering this, the signal is very reasonable. There is a lot of local electrical noise at my location, but despite this, the broadcast is totally readable. I have attached a short audio clip of what I have received. I would be very grateful if you could send me an EQSL card to verify my reception report. I wish you all the best and hope to hear from you in the future. Take care and 73s. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Owen Williams from England, and please accept our warm gratitude to you for sending us this email. We're so glad that you were successful in receiving the signals of IRIB English radio in your region in Bristol, England. And it seems that you enjoyed the quality of the signal as you found it reasonable and, of course, readable. Thank God. Anyway, we received your audio clip. Thank you for that. We wish you all the best. And we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Owen Williams from England. And from Spain, one of our old and regular listeners called Arthur Fernandez Lorella has sent us a piece of email. Let's see what Arthur Fernandez Lorella says. Dear friends, it would be so kind of you to send me QSL card again in a short time. That is very nice of you. I hope to get it very soon. Let me wish you a nice day, and I am sending you my warm greetings from Catalonia in Spain, waiting for a reply from your side. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and on behalf of all IRIB English radio staff, to you, Arthur Fernandez Lorella from Spain. We're so happy that our signals are received in Catalonia in Spain. Thank you for this email, Arthur. And of course, we will send you an electronic QSL as a verification very, very soon. We wish you all the best. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Tio from Manila, the Philippines, has sent us an email. For your information, Tio is one of our OLAN regular listeners. Let's see what Tio says. Dear IRIB, I am Aaron Tio from Manila, the Philippines. I am enclosing the details of shortwave radio reception for IRIB English Radio. When I tuned into your radio, I heard some Persian music, I presumed, which I liked so much. I hope that my reception report would be acknowledged with a QSL verification card. Salam and greetings to you, Tio, from Manila, the Philippines, one of our old and regular listeners. Tio, please accept our warm appreciations to you for this email. Thank God you enjoyed the music. It must be a piece of Iranian traditional music, as we always broadcast. Tio from Manila, the Philippines, thank you for letting us know your attitudes toward IRIB English radio programs. It's a pleasure. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Tio from Manila, thank you again. Well, as they say, art is long, but time is short. So before wrapping up this edition of Listeners Special, again, I thank all those our great listeners who kindly sent us emails and letters from around the world, as well as reception reports, including Owen Williams from England, Joan Hutchell from Austria, Hitoshi Sugio from Japan, Arthur Fernandez Lorella from Spain, Tio from Manila, the Philippines, Victor Verzin from Russia, Federico Caria from Italy, and Marek Peace from Poland. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with Listeners Special and your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio. Have a good time and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
Rabbana, You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be asking a question kind of related to the events of the day of Ashura and the Battle of Karbala. This question is kind of related in general terms to a more universal problem, and that is regarding the authenticity of a lot of the events which are narrated from the pulpits regarding, the Day of Ashura and the Battle of Karbala. Specifically, this question is about the event which is often narrated from the pulpits, which says that when the brother of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, Abu al-Fazl al-Abbas, went to the river Furat to fetch water for the children of the Ahlul Bayt, he picked up a handful of water, and then upon remembering Imam Hussein, he threw it away. So the question is that how do we know if this is really true and this occurred when under the circumstances, the assumption is that he went there alone and nobody was with him, and nobody was around him at that time. So, how do we know that this event really transpired? In response to this question, we can say that on the day of Ashura and the Battle of Karbala, there were certain individuals, in general terms, who were recording the particulars and the details of what was transpiring in that situation. For example, there was a person named Hamid ibn Muslim. He is one of the transmitters who tangibly and immediately witnessed these events of Karbala. And many of the events of this battle were transcribed in the history, the famous book of history of Tabari, and other, historical books. Of course, this person was belonged to the army of Umar ibn Sa'd, historically speaking, right? But nevertheless, him and other historians have mentioned that, Hazrat Abu al-Fazl Abbas, alayhi salam, he arrived at the river of the Euphrates, and he picked up a handful of water, and upon remembering the thirst of his brother Imam Hussein and the children of the Ahlul Bayt, he threw it down. And, he recited a poem at this time. This poem was heard and transmitted, regarding the fact that, it's not worthy of me to do this, to drink this water when, my brother and, these other people are thirsty. And then upon reciting this poem, he threw the water back into the river, and then he made his way back to the decampments of Imam Hussein, upon which he was attacked by the enemy and he was martyred. This event has been specifically recorded in the famous Maqtal of Muqarram on page 267, the famous book of the events of Ashura, as well as the book Nafasul Mahmum on page 409. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the events of Ashura and their authenticity. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Thank you. IB English Radio.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
Cultivating an Islamic identity in a postmodern world has been our topic tonight. And so tonight, what I want to talk a little bit about tonight and tomorrow, that is a little bit of the I-ness inside of me. Now let me give you a little bit of a muqaddamah, an introductory, and then we'll get to our actual discussion. This discussion is not easy. It's not easy to deliver. It's not easy to digest. And if up until now we haven't lived a quote-unquote Islamic life, and you know, Islam is a life to live. It's a conscious decision. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala invites us to that life. Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, istajibu lillahi wa lirusuli idha da'akum lima yuhyikum. It's a flat-out invitation. He says, and when I invite you, answer my call. So answer the call of Allah and the Prophet, إِذَا دَعَاكُمْ, when they invite you towards that which will bring you life. The fi'l is muzari. Not only is it future, it's also hal, present, it's jari as well. Meaning that hayat will continue to give to you over and over and over again. But I find it ajeeb to me that Allah says answer by call, which means that Allah realizes there are other individuals, other concepts, other societies that are also calling you towards life. The example I sometimes give, and it's an odd one, I'm sorry, is imagine walking into a flea market and there's different stalls. And every stall now usually is selling a different item. And depending on what you need, you go to a stall, you bite, and you leave the flea market. But in this flea market, everyone is selling their version of life. Every stall is saying, come by me, I'm the life you want to live. So whether it's this dunya, whether it's, for example, a friend of yours, whether it's a habit or an act, whether it's the akhirat, whether it's shaitan, whatever the case may be, this is a flea market made of different stalls, all selling life, 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 and the other person who's also selling life is God Himself. By this verse, He says, answer my call, buy my product, invest in the path. Meaning taqwa, a God-centric life, is a conscious decision. I always say this to a lot of my families out there. There continues to be questions about raising children, having a solid marriage in this very difficult era. And rightfully so. I mean, you know, Maulana Rizvi is talking about family life right now there at JCC in Urdu. And, you know, these are those kind of topics that, you know, need to be addressed in the first 10 days. Our homes are on fire. Divorce rates are skyrocketing. And part of it is the fact that we have to, first as a couple, as a husband and wife, we have to form an Islamic identity inside the home. What type of family do we want? Just as a side point, and I'll get to the who-ness and I-ness in a moment. We have to identify what kind of family do we want to raise. We all want pious kids. We all want, you know, Imam Zamanah soldiers, as all of you say. And that's great, very ambitious. But it requires some work. And I always give the value and compromise discussion. If you value your Islamic identity inside your home, if you value certain Islamic principles inside the home, then you have to ask yourself, what am I willing to compromise to gain those values? And that's where I find it becomes difficult, hard. Sometimes, you know, the kids of your siblings, the kids of your first cousins, the kids of your extended family are doing this, are going here, are wearing this. And your kids, where you're trying to establish a certain identity to, are always asking, Mama, why can't we go there? Why can't I wear this? Why can't we eat this? And that's when you have to tell them we're compromising all of this to hold on to our Islamic value. It's not easy. At the same time, I'm asking myself and all of you to embrace that difficulty. I think sometimes we're scared to be uncomfortable. To sit in discomfort sometimes is hard. Like, cultivating an Islamic identity is a portion of self-care and self-love. And the sad part is that while these are not foreign elements in Islam, this new craze in the West about self-love and self-care and, you know, knowing yourself and loving yourself was all 1400 years ago. The problem is that way that the taqwa and the deen has been presented to us is not through the self and not through self-love. In fact, we think the more that I squash myself, the more pious I am. So now when there is some elements inside of me that need to be healed, wounds I need to tend to, scabs I need to fix, I won't do it because I don't want to be uncomfortable. And sometimes you have to sit in that discomfort to get to your value place that you have valued as a family. وَأَسَىٰ أَن تَكْرُهُ شَيْئًا وَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ. If, you know, it could be that you despise something the Quran says. You despise something. It's hard for you. When in reality, if you look at it, وَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ, it's actually very good for you. وَعَسَىٰ أَن تُحِبُّوا شَيْئًا وَهُوَ شَرٌّ لَكُمْ. It could be that you love something, adore it, I don't want to let go of it. It's very important to me. It's actually شَرٌّ for you, evil for you. So sometimes how we feel isn't the best criteria. That's not the best litmus test. So if that means that we kind of revisit some of the old trauma, Islamic trauma I talked about yesterday, let it come up, deal with it, sit there in discomfort for a while, right? Get the help you need, find the outlet you need, right? Get some mental health help, and then of course get to that area, then so be it. But sometimes I think we're a little bit afraid. So what do? We numb it. We numb it. With social media, with our phones, with video games, with drugs, with you name it. Whatever can kind of push that down, that's better. As it comes up, push it down. That's why a lot of the ulama of today, you see these Instagram posts, they talk about the fact that the majalis of Imam Hussein is a healing process. Sometimes you can't find the emotion outside of the first 10 days. This farsh allows you to express your grief without you even understanding the fact that you're actually healing yourself in the process. When my father passed away, there were days that the emotion was stuck here. I couldn't get it out. I didn't want to get it out. It was here. But I knew that for my betterment, I had to express it. So literally, I would put on the masaib of Imam Hussein. And it would make me light. I become halka, foran become halka, because now the tears are out. And I didn't realize it's part of my healing process. A lot of us need to heal, guys. It's okay to sit there and look at the wound. Because the first step in healing the knife in your back is to tell yourself there's a knife in my back. If I tell myself there's nothing in my back, I'm not going to heal. And that means that yes, we have to sometimes sit in discomfort, have uncomfortable conversations. Inshallah, if you are blessed with a spouse where they are an outlet for you, use them as an outlet. This is not an easy discussion. Because when we get into the whole idea of I-ness and who-ness and who you are, it goes beyond the material and hits the immaterial. So whole discussion in Islamic theology under the discussion on ma'ad, the hereafter, on the immaterial nature of the soul, okay? Those who deny the life of the hereafter, part of that denial is they actually see the soul to be material, or they deny the immaterial nature of the soul. And this has to be understood. There's an element inside of us that is immaterial. And you know, inshallah, I'll explain to the best of my ability. that one I'm talking about.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen Ghafur Shakurun Wadud Qayyumun Rauf Saburun Majid. محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. Today, we will look at a few more verses on the topic of faith. There are a few points we must consider. Firstly, faith is one of the foremost qualities of God's prophets and the true believers who follow them. They have faith in their own message. This is the difference between divine leaders and the political leaders of the world today. A divine leader, as someone who follows this path, by whatever he says, by every step he takes, by the path that he follows, with all of his being, is a sincere believer. On the other hand, the world's political leaders might sometimes say nice things and give moving speeches, but this does not necessarily mean that they necessarily believe in what they say to even the slightest degree. There is a story about the leaders of one of the communist nations of the Eastern Bloc, who professed atheism and utterly rejected any culture or philosophy that was not based on materialism. This story takes place shortly after the Indian independence. In order to win the hearts of the massed millions of Indians who have just won their independence, these leaders visit India.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
There, the people of India were amazed to see that the leaders of this communist nation had Tilaka marks on their foreheads. Tilak was one of the leaders of the Indian independence movement, as well as a Hindu religious scholar. He was one of the greatest leaders of the Hindu religion, and both a leader and a pioneer of the independence movement for a period of time. It is worth me taking some time to mention this to you, even though it is not directly relevant to our present discussion, because it is good to know about such things. From beginning to end, the Indian independence struggle lasted 90 years, and from the beginning to end, its most important leaders were all men of religion, whether Muslim or Hindu. Some of the most important Muslim leaders were Maulana Shah Mahmud Dehlawi, Maulana Mahmud al-Hasan, Maulana Abul Kalam Azad, Maulana Muhammad Ali, and Maulana Shaukat Ali. In any case, when these communist leaders, who espoused atheism and materialism, went to India, in order to win people over to their cause, they put the Tilak mark on their heads. In other words, they wanted to say, "Yes, us too, we believe the same as you." This, even though their own words and beliefs contradicted this statement. Those political leaders who are removed from spiritual, religious, or divine responsibilities are like this. But the prophets of Allah believed in whatever they spoke with the totality of their being.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me. Through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you for bringing me home.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.